Broadcasting from one of the many COVID hotspots in North America, this is the Coin Rejects episode 54. And we're back. I'm sitting around my home office desk looking at my fellow rejects.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Jordan.
Ian.
And I'm Brian, and you can find us on the web at coinrejects.com. Send us an email at coinrejects@gmail.com. Check out our Instagram, instagram.com/coinrejects. Check us out on Twitter, twitter.com/coinrejects. And you can send us a voicemail at
503-766-2263.
Are we skipping the voicemails for now and going straight to beers?
Straight to the mailbag?
Straight to the mailbag.
Physical mailbag.
The physical, yeah.
Coin mailbag, since the Postal Service did not get canceled or whatever else, you know. Had to get those unverified ballots in the mail so could get rid of the postal
service. Yeah, I sent a couple thousand. I think I did pretty good. How about you?
Voted early.
100 at least, off, right?
Yeah. Seems to have worked.
It takes my hand was pretty cramped from forging all those signatures. It takes some effort.
All those southern states.
I feel bad for all the people who have to verify those votes. Whatever.
Yep. And you know, you got to make sure you vote the split ticket so it goes under the radar. Biden for president and then like whatever Republican assholes down ballot.
Yeah. All mine went to Florida. It didn't work.
Yeah. We have physical mail, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Mailbags.
Yeah, some beers. Long promised beers.
That's right. What's our theme for mailbag? There's got to be a mail song or something.
Yeah. So I'm cracking this pretentious Barrel House Magnanimous Oyo, which is apparently a coffee-flavored sour beer.
So who was it that sent this to us again?
Yeah. So this is one of our listeners, Josh from Columbus, Ohio, and he has his own brewery, Pretentious Barrel House. He collects games. He has games in his brewery. Not sure if that's functioning, but a while back, he sent us some beers, and they've just been hibernating on top of one of my cabinets. And,
ooh.
Yeah, so we're cracking these
this
open finally. So,
holy shit. Okay, so apparently I was misled about this being a coffee beer. It says dark sour finished in honey vanilla bean bourbon barrels from Middle West Spirits, and it's 10.3 ABV. So,
nice.
Cheers. If I'm coherent by the end of this episode, it'll be something.
Yeah. I thought I looked up the description of that on his site, and it said that it was a coffee one. I mean, it had those other notes too, but yeah.
It has a bit of a coffee note for sure, but the vanilla really comes out. It's good. I like it a lot. Nice. Cheers. Thank you very much, Josh.
Wait, coins up or coins down?
Coins up on this one for sure.
Yeah, I mean, we were pretty excited to hear about some free sour beers. So, yeah, I love this. So we were going to kind of maybe wait until we all get back together again and celebrate, but that doesn't seem like that's happening anytime soon. So we don't want beers to spoil.
The election went pretty well, so there's a reason to celebrate.
There you go. Yeah. That's
cool. I mean, so far.
So the one I have, again, from Pretentious Brewing, and I hope to go visit there someday, and I probably will, I think. This one is the Sybarite? I like Brandon's pronunciation. How was it?
I was just joking.
Oh, okay.
Sid Barrett.
Sid Barrett, yeah.
Bonnet! It's American Sour Ale with cherries. Alcohol 5.6 volume, so you know I probably won't get drunk, you know, because that never happens.
Yeah, it wouldn't. Yeah, never happens.
And so Sybaris was in Greek city in the 1600s, where it was a town full of citizens that loved nice things. So a Sybarite would be somebody who's into nice things. And since we collect classic arcade games, I think we're all into nice things around here. Here we go. I'm gonna take a drink.
Damn, that's a big pour.
Oh, this is delicious. Yeah, this is just the kind of sour beer I like. This reminds me a lot of like the fresh stuff they have at Cascade Ale House. This is really good.
What is it? I read the description before I put it out outside for you. Is it? It says that it's like a tart. It has like
very
some tart to it.
Yeah, very tart, and then it's got the cherry taste to it. Yeah, this is good. I mean, I wish I could drink like 10 of these, but you can't.
Yeah.
Terrible heartburn and probably like herpes in your mouth or something. Those sores. Yeah.
Yeah. You need too much
citrusy stuff. So, right. Yeah, but it's delicious. This is my kind of beer right here. Thank you.
Yep. Nice.
Brandon's up.
I asked Misty to help me on this because I wanted to, because we haven't tried that much sour beer. So this is a thick berry.
With two C's.
With two C's. And it's basically a blueberry.
Nice. You drank sour beers before at all?
Nope.
No. And you're cracking it right now.
Yeah. I put it in the fridge this morning, so that's right.
It'll either change your life or not.
I actually like that a lot.
It's good. Nice.
Yeah.
How does it compare to hams?
Oh, nothing compares to hams. maybe my palate's just jacked from having Miller Lite, but there's not a strong blueberry. It comes way late, but it has like a nice, very nice carbonation. And it is sour.
I like the nice carbonation is the compliment. Like,
well, no, it has like the, you know, like the, I don't know. I don't drink beers to like fucking critique them, but has like the nice fizzy, like, you know, like when you just down some like champagne or something. It's like really
little bubbles, not big bubbles, right?
Yeah, little bubbles.
Nice. Yeah. I'm actually interested because
it's really good. What's that?
My typical sour beer is, you know, at Cascade, and I just get, fucking you know, sour. Like 8 to 10 different tasters and try everything on the menu. So it's kind of a change to have a whole bottle of one. But yeah. I'm into it. And a pretentious barrel house, you deserve a couple plugs for sending us some beer, in my opinion.
This is good. This reminds me of the Creek that they have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what this tastes like, which is my favorite when I go to Cascade.
That's a real good one.
Nicely done.
This is really good.
Brandon, you might want to pour it in a glass, though. I think.
Whatever.
I think when you chug them out of a bottle, I really think they're supposed to breathe a little bit.
It's breathing right now. Well, I'm not drinking.
Get a good nose.
I know what you mean, but
chugging mine out the bottle. I don't know if I have a vessel large enough for this thing.
I don't know what you mean. I mean, I know what you mean, but I don't care because I can tell it's good and it is very sour. And it's not. I thought it'd be like overly sweet. I was anticipating like some cider vibes, you know, where it's just so fucking sweet. It's kind of you just don't even want to finish more than a taster. No, I want to down this fucking bottle.
Yeah, no, that's why sours are so superior to ciders.
Yeah, I would agree.
Oh, definitely.
I'm a fan. I think this is nice. And thanks again for sending these, Josh. Feel free. Hey, if you got any,
anybody answers, else out there,
plug this. Any other breweries?
Plug the shit out of you, man.
Barcade, we know you're listening.
Yeah, a Barcade, any Barcade. Yeah. Even if you have like a keg of hams, just send it on up.
All right. What else is in the mailbag?
Yeah, we got a voicemail, Josh. Got a voicemail from Geech. And you can edit out this dead space.
No, I'm gonna leave it in.
Hey, Rejects, how's it going? Geech here. I have recently been putting in some extra work, earning my Trace Lister General merit badge, and I'm well on the way to completing that. So that leads me to some questions. I'm just kind of curious to hear what you guys have to say for techniques, tips, tricks for dealing with lifted traces, repairing plated through holes, jumpers, so forth. Curious to hear your thoughts on that. And, you know, I think I'm using a decent iron, Weller WS 51, running it around 650. Had been using the Sada Pullet and Braid with ample flux, but clearly user error was a substantial component here. Hopefully the Hakko desoldering gun that I recently acquired will help take care of some of that. But yeah, just curious to hear if you guys have your own time-tested, proven methods for trace reparations and through-hole repairs, etc. Been doing some research online, but always love to hear you guys go off on it. Thanks. Keep it up. Ciao.
Yeah, buddy.
Thank you, Geach.
You can tell how down he was at the beginning of that voicemail talking about lifting traces.
It's pretty sad when it happens. It's pretty disappointing. But it's a fucking awesome topic.
Yeah, I've just been working on a 6100 and started working on it. Ian was like, you better be careful. Those are notorious for like lifting traces. And I luckily got through most of it without, there was one that like, it was like a partially lifted trace, like half of it kind of came off. And I was mentioning this to in our chat about how some of the diodes on that board, the legs are kind of bent over underneath the solder side. So when you desolder them, they don't come out right away. They're just like stuck like right next to the board. So there's like a little bit of solder that's still attached.
It's like a full on 90 degree bend, right?
Exactly. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Flush on the pad.
And so when I pulled this one off, it's like pulled off like half the pad. And this is when I was putting on the LV2000 and it has like really long legs. Cause of course the one place I'm desoldering all this stuff. And the one, you know, I have to use like three holes. And of course one of them is the one that like the trace partially lifts. So I was like, fuck. But lucky enough, the leg for that one part was long enough that I could go through that hole and then like bend it down to like the next trace over that was in that same area. Yeah. So that's one way you can go about it if you have a long enough leg that you can get it to reach another trace in that same area that's connected.
Yeah, that's called the nearest.
But the next.
It's called the nearest neighbor.
Neighbor.
They usually do it. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's just something I agree. That's a good way of doing it. That's great for fairly large components like a cap or a transistor where the traces aren't all up on each other. You need a little bit more finesse if you've lifted a trace on a dip component, because usually everything is so dense that you can't get to the nearest neighbor without crossing over something else and risking shorting that, or maybe the lead isn't long enough to reach there. So in that case, you want some Kynar wire, which is 30 gauge, and I usually just put a socket in. I usually put sockets in. I think it's reasonable not to, but if you have those damaged traces, then a socket is really helpful, because if you ever have to remove the component, the repaired traces stay with the socket. So I always make sure I put in a socket if there's a repaired trace. And in that case, you wrap a little Kynar around the lead and solder that one end, and then tack it down with some super glue or clear nail polish. Just route it, and then nearest neighbor, and right on there. Depending on how the board's made, you might have to scrape off a little of the solder mask on the bottom in order to get some metal to solder it onto. And then my other tip for Kynar is don't even bother with strippers. You just use the angle nippers and get a feel for it. Like once you've done it a couple times, the first few times you do it, you're just going to use too much pressure and cut right through the 30 gauge. But once you get the hang of it, you can do it pretty easily. You can also melt the insulation off with the soldering iron, which is another pro move.
Yeah. It's funny you say that. I've done that too. Like you can't use a wire stripper. And even with like the angle, what are they called again? Flush cutters kind of like,
yeah,
you have to barely, I mean, like most of the time I end up just cutting it off and like, oh shit. And like barely graze it to get the jacket off. And then I've tried burning it too. I've even tried just burning it with the soldering iron, but it looks kind of shitty. So I just tend to go the stripping method. And I like to use, like hot glue gun sometimes, because I like to be able to reverse it if I look shitty or whatever.
And the hot glue kind of gets all the way around the wire, and so it's you know it's going to hold on there. I mean, I haven't tried super glue or nail polish, so thanks Ian for that one. I've always just done a glob of hot glue, you know.
Yeah, I think nail polish would be pretty good.
Yeah, I usually try to route the wire, when you're done. And then, like, once it's in place, we'll secure it.
Another thing about stripping it, I've scraped it with a razor blade before. You just kind of scrape stripes, kind of the same thing you do with the flush cutters. But it's a little easier. You can kind of just lay it down and just scrape. But then the hard part is, like, turning the wire and actually, like, trying to scrape it all the way around and not just scraping the same damn stripe over and over and over again.
Yeah, Kynar is definitely what you need. If you need any, let me know. I got, like, you can even get, like, the pre-cut snip sometimes, and, I mean, that will save you a little bit of time on doing one side. I think those usually come with, like, the breadboard kits. You know, you can get, like, a whole 100 pack, and then you can at least snip one side of it instantly, solder that down, and that gives you more room to maneuver the other end and see how much you need.
Scraped already for you, right? So then you just cut it to length, and then you have to scrape the new side.
Yeah. I think a lot of people, like, I remember me and Ian were talking about a long time ago how we could tell who repairs what by the color of Kynar or something. I thought we talked about that one time, but I always have, like, a neon green one, and I think I have, like, a neon blue one now.
I think the pre-cut wires that come with breadboard kits are thicker than the 30 gauge.
I
don't know if I'd do that for IC stuff.
I bought, like, some pre-bundle of whatever it was of those Kynar strips, and obviously it's Kynar, but it's not, I don't know what the fuck I'm saying, but I know what you're talking about, the thicker breadboard pre-cut stuff, but this is, like, the same setup. Like, I just actually got it at the bins.
Is Kynar different wire wrap? Like, you can get wire wrap into different gauges in, like, a spool and a roll. Kind of looks like solder. Radio Shack used to sell it. It's really the same thing, isn't it?
Kynar is a brand name that has become generic to mean very thin gauge wire for that type of repair work.
With, like, kind of that baked on insulation. It's not rubbery. It's just hard in color, right? In
case you don't know what if you ever looked at the Robotron boards, you know, with the factory.
Yeah.
Factory mod, the most factory modified boards use, like, that gauge of wire because they can snake it under ICs and resistors and all that stuff. So,
yeah, the Havoc conversion boards have that to route the uncorrected video signal to the edge connector. I got all my Kynar from Radio Shack when they were going out of business, and it was 90% off. So I'm probably set for life on that.
Nice. Front.
I just pull mine off Major Havoc boards.
Yeah. Well, you're deconverting them, right?
Yeah.
And on the original question, how do you not lift traces? Like, the repair work is good too, but ideally you don't want to have to do those repairs. If you're lifting traces, there's too much heat. That's 9 times out of 10, that's the issue. So use less heat, use more flux. That's my advice for not doing that. And in Brian's situation where you have one of those leads that's flat against the pad, I would really recommend cutting it off on the top side and just shoving it through, like, melt the solder, shove it through, and then get it out that way. Because it's very difficult to get those out without ripping a piece of the pad off or lifting it.
Yeah, that's what I had to do for those. I was like, cut the top, but even then it was still a little bit difficult to get them off, but sometimes I have to put a little bit more solder on there and just kind of maneuver them through the hole, but it worked. The one thing that I did outside of adding flux was just put a little fresh solder on the points, and then right before that, and then use the desoldering gun after that. And then with the desoldering gun, you also want to be careful not to put it directly on the pad for too long, like have it above the board at first until it starts to melt, and then, you know, trigger it, and then you can push down a little bit further and jiggle it around a little bit and try to get it loose.
Yeah, it's a careful balance. You can definitely get the solder flowing without having it on the pad, but in order to get good suction through the hole, it really does have to be down on the pad. So you gotta get it up you know, towards the tip until you see it start melting, and then shove it down and then hit the button.
solder helps the heat flow, so don't be shy to add more solder. I know it sounds weird, like, hey, get the solder off this thing, but no, go ahead and add fresh solder to it. It makes it, you know, transfer the heat better, and it creates that initial, when you get that, if you're using like a Hakko or something that's a vacuum, you'll have an easier time probably getting that initial seal to get that suction as well, I think.
Yeah, one of the reasons why solder works is because the solder has flux in it. So, you know, you can also just put flux down if you have some. I like the gel type. It has, I have a little syringe of it, and it'll lay down just a little bit. I like that good. But definitely the solder will help. And where the solder helps the most is where the solder has not melted all the way through, or if they put a bunch of solder in there and there's like a blob of it on the top side of the board, that can be hard to get to melt without putting too much heat on the board. So you might end up in a situation where you've cleared the bottom side, but there is some stuff still stuck on the top. And in that case, flowing some extra solder through there and then sucking it out again will oftentimes clear that out for you. Repairing plated through holes isn't really something that you have to do much on this era of electronics. You know, most monitor PCBs are single-sided, so they only have traces on the one side, and you can do all your repair work there. Most of the logic PCBs are double-sided. Where you need to do that type of work is if you have a multi-layer board and there's a connection internally, which sucks. But on dual-layer boards, generally, you know, the leg of the component is going to serve as the only repair you need. And then you just need to patch, you know, if you lost the pad on one side or the other, you patch from the leg to, you know, wherever the trace would go.
You know what pads I lose? When it's the little circle one that doesn't go anywhere. That's
yep.
Little vias, yeah.
Those. And the reason, do you know why those are more prone to falling off?
They're not connected to anything.
Right. Because even though there's just that little bit, you know, a little thin trace connected to the pad on the ones that hook up to something, that's enough that the heat will sink through it and it'll keep the temperature on the pad a little lower. Whereas when it's not connected to anything, all the heat stays right there, and so it's more prone to come off. It also doesn't have, like, other stuff holding it down onto the PCB.
So you basically...
Yeah, I lose those pretty frequently when I work on, like, RAM on an Asteroids or whatever.
So you kind of just, like, you burnt the glue off that holds it together and said,
yeah,
falls off.
But they don't go anywhere, so it doesn't really matter. It just looks shitty.
Yeah. Ah, oh, fuck. There was something there.
The worst is Williams boards. They're pretty shitty. But there's certain boards that don't lift traces as much as other ones. And another thing to consider is your chisel tip, right? Or your tip of your soldering iron. If you're using the conical, right, like the pointy in, like the pencil tip style, you may not be getting good heat distribution. And depending on how big the trace is, you'll be either burning the shit out of it because you're just trying to maneuver it and lay it on its side, and then you're burning into the PCB material itself.
I use a pretty fat chisel tip, much fatter than I thought I would want when I started out. I thought you'd want something pointy, like really precise. But then I got this iron that had a big fat tip on it. I'm like, oh, this is better.
And yeah, I've always used the chisel tips. And I think,
and just so we're clear, because I think there's some confusing terminology on this. I think screwdriver tip is the most accurate. It's a flat blade, whereas I think chisel tip is often used for surface mount type stuff and is just like a real chunky instead of being more of a thin blade style.
Yep. Yeah.
And sorry, go ahead.
Nope, go ahead. Okay, fine.
If it looks like you could write with it, like it should have lead sticking out of the end, that's not what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's what I have. I've never used the screwdriver flathead kind.
I like it because
it's the best.
If you get it you want to get it the width of the pad itself, right? So that you could just rest it on the pad there, and then with the, you know, like with a pencil or conical thing, it's like you have to be really precise. And
yeah,
the chisel tips are more like autopilot, right? When you have like the board in a vise, you can actually rest it. You have more leverage to rest it because it's flat against the pad and the end of the pins.
Yeah, with the conical, I found that I would always like lay it sideways on
I've done that.
So you're effectively not even using it for its purpose at that point, right? Because you're trying to get more surface area. So
these kind do that.
Yeah. More. Brandon said the magic words, which is surface area. Soldering is all about transferring heat from your iron into the workpiece. That's the combination of the solder pad and lead. And when you have a flat tip like that, like imagine that you have two balls, right? Which
okay, done. And
you have the two balls touching, right? And that the contact surface area is very small in that case. Whereas if you have two pieces of paper, you have a great deal of surface area contacting. So especially when you're doing dip components, which tend to have flat leads like that, if you have a flat tip, then you're just transferring heat much more efficiently. And that means that you can turn the heat on your iron down lower because you're not wasting as much of the heat into the environment. You're actually putting it all into the workpiece. So I strongly recommend when you're doing the soldering that you use a flat tip like that. The other piece, though, is when you're desoldering, make sure you have the right size desoldering tip on your gun. And I think the one the Hakko comes with is like 1 millimeter, something like that. And I find that much too large for any kind of dip rework. And I have, I think it was 0.8 is the size that I like for that. But the next one down, and again, if you're not getting contact on the pad, you're not transferring that heat. And if it's, you know, not making a good seal on that hole, then it won't be able to suck the solder through.
Do you see this tip, Brian?
Too big.
That's huge. Don't recommend that.
Oh, it's right next.
Put your finger next to it. Put your finger behind it.
I'm looking at ones on Amazon right now for my soldering iron. I can get like a Weller.
Yeah. Never mind.
There's some Weller I keep in the arcade for.
Do you want to buy my old Hakko?
No, I'm good with mine.
No, you're not.
No, you're not. The fuck you are.
Let me know. Yeah. I got a nice soldering iron, a couple extra tips, complete inbox.
Yeah, if you get the good quality, like you. I mean, I finally changed the tip out on mine. I didn't even need to, but I had that same one on there for like 6 or 7 years, and it's like if you get the good quality ones, you're not burning through tips like the cheap ones.
Yeah.
Another thing about the trace repair is, you can use Kynar. Some people like to use like the fucking cap leads and shit like that. I hate doing that. I don't know why, but
They're not insulated, so if you go across anything,
Well, if you do it within the width of the trace, it doesn't matter. But I've just always thought that was kind of a, I don't know. It's already hacked at that point, and it.
Yeah, but my floor is littered with them. I can just pick them up off the ground and use them. It's great.
Yeah, I've never liked that method. It just kind of freaks me out a little bit.
It is what it is. If you do end up doing that, I recommend putting a dab of hot glue under the component, like if this is a cap or something like that, because it doesn't have the same mechanical stability as if it's soldered right in place. So if you like jostle it or whatever, you might damage something. So I would recommend sticking a little bit of glue underneath it.
Nice tip.
Yeah, nice chisel tip. Yeah. The two repairs that I recommend is, if it's a dip component, like Ian said, is obviously replace the socket. And if, you know, because if the lifted trace is on, say, pin one or whatever, you know, the socket will hold down, obviously, the component. And you can use the end of that dip, right, that's not, that dip pin that's not connected to anything because the trace is lifted, and just solder that to the where the connection ends. Or if it's a 5 volt or ground, then you could probably solder it somewhere else. But usually that's not the case. And then if it's I don't know, there's like the funner ones. If it's like a power trace, that's when it gets kind of scary because you can't use shit like Kynar, right? If it's like a higher voltage trace, you have to use a beefier gauge.
How long the run is, really. I mean, if it's little, then fine.
Yeah, it depends. I mean,
well, it does depend on how much amperage is going through there or whatever, but you're not going to measure that. You're going to see if it works, I suppose. I don't think in practical terms on a game PCB, are you going to say, oh shit, my Kynar is too skinny, it won't work to repair this trace? I'd like to see a
two pieces of Kynar.
There you go.
Double. Yeah, the other thing is
powering our 1,000-watt Orion to 215s out of
fucking JBL van or whatever. Yeah. The other thing is, if the trace is like a good example is like the Williams ROM boards, right? That 40-pin connector that's very prone to lifting traces, which is why they recommend, Jesus, you down that fucker.
It's good. It's gone. Sorry.
Holy shit. Stop. You said you weren't going to be drunk. You know, you should replace just the ribbon cable, not screw with the traces. But if you lift something like that, sometimes it's easier to, pull it a good distance, right? Start pulling it out a little bit more.
Yeah, it's always easy. Then pull it a good distance.
Exacto it off, and then that way you have something clean to solder to at that point. So it's kind of like it depends on the situation, what specific board that happened to you on, but all the fixes are different.
Yeah, I think the worst board I've worked on is Midway Galaga. Those PCBs are really poorly put together. And all the traces are super close too, so it's very, very easy to bridge something with a splash of solder.
Yeah, flux, a shit ton of flux, adding some solder on there beforehand, and then watch your heat, right? If it's a tiny trace, you probably don't want to go in at, I don't know what you said, did he say 800 or something like that?
700. Yeah, 650. Okay. I would turn that down.
Yeah. Myself. If it's like some ground pad or something, it's going to be like you have to jack it way up. But those tiny traces, I mean, you want to watch the amount of time as well. And if you're using those conical ones, right, you're going to be on there forever. So it goes back to that distribution of heat and how much time. And, you'll get a feel for it really quick. If you're fucking shit up, you should probably adjust something and change your methods up.
I got one more related tip, and then I think we're ready to move on. At least I am. Cleaning up flux. This is a thing that stymied me for a long time because I really hated when I reworked something and then there was just a shit ton of flux all over the board, because like that stuff is real helpful, but it's also kind of a sticky mess. And I tried a couple different chemical cleaners specifically for it, and I did not like any of them. But what I eventually found was the business is 99% isopropyl alcohol, which if you are an Oregon resident, you can pick up at your local Fred Meyer for like $1.70 something for a pint of it. And then I got a solution bottle and just put it in there. So it gives you a nice, fairly thin stream. And you just douse the board in that stuff and use a piece of crap toothbrush to do some scrubbing. If you just do this in your sink, you'll see it, run off amber. And then as soon as it's clean, it's good. Then just dab it dry and you're good to go. No sticky mess.
I'll add the same thing. Oh, go ahead.
That's the same thing that I do. But then if you're a true arcade collector, you just don't fucking clean your flux and you just run it.
Yeah, it's like a badge of honor. It's like, it's that chip. You could tell.
Badge of honor.
The badge.
But if it's
where it's been worked, I like to look at a board and see that flux and say, oh, they were fucking around here. And then you can look at their work. Hey, it's good work. Or, oh, God, yeah, that looks terrible. That's probably the problem,
Usually what I do is if it's for someone else, I'll clean it. If it's for me, I don't give a shit.
I'll say one more thing about pulling traces. I know we talked a lot about repair, but as far as, actual pulling the traces, I remember working on my first game PCBs, which are very different from monitor PCBs as far as the traces are small and more delicate. And I pulled traces by, physically yanking the chips when the solder wasn't done yet. I mean, I had not removed enough solder, and I was like, get this fucking thing out of here, and it wouldn't come out. So you put some big pliers on it and just try to yank it out of there, and then you're like pulling the traces off the top of the board. So I mean, it happened to me. I'm sure it could happen to somebody else who is listening. So yeah, honestly, components should be practically wanting to fall out. There isn't any kind of force generally needed.
Unless it's an old Space Invaders board where, we were talking about, they basically fold over every single fucking dip chip.
Ugh. Yeah, but yeah, at least there's... you can see that things will move around, like if you push them with the iron or whatever.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
When you're pulling an IC, that's not an easy thing to do, you know. If it's like, you know, whatever, a 10-pin, 12-pin thing, and they all have to be done. I mean, you should see dark around every leg, you know. There should be a black circle around the leg before you start thinking you're going to get that thing out of there.
Yeah. A couple other good tips on that subject are... shine a light through the board, and anything that's not cleared out, you'll be able to see the light go through that hole. That's a real good way of doing it. Also, like when you get it good, and you know, like Jordan was saying, the chip just really wants to come out and just falls right out. That's really good. But a lot of times you have some sweat joints in there that are holding the legs in a little bit. And what the most force I recommend using for this is if you get a plastic spudger, and you stick it between the chip and the PCB and just very gently pry it a little bit, then if you have some of those sweat joints, then they'll break pretty clean and your part will come out. But do not use a screwdriver, because
yeah,
you will put too much force on it and risk ripping a trace or damaging a trace that runs under the chip. But a little plastic spudger has a good balance of force that gets applied, but it's not going to fuck stuff up too much.
Spudger.
Budget.
Like, I've done the screwdriver method before carefully, and it actually it works if you use this. If you use fuck yeah,
kind of finesse it.
If you're skilled, you can do it good, but it is, you have to be careful.
So I cracked open another. Is it time for another?
Another beer review.
Thanks, Geach.
What, you got two beers?
Yeah, I took the extra one.
I told you.
I did the one extra. So now, is it time for a word from our sponsor?
Yes.
All right. Courtesy of Pretentious Brewing here, I'm now going to try the Bedizened Con Fuego. Now, I did not look up what Bedizened means. This is Pretentious Barrel House again.
Where you put jewels on your dizzen.
What is your chisel tip? Your chisel tip.
Bedizened. Con Fuego, I can understand that's hot, spicy.
Yeah.
So I did look up this beer on Untappd. It's sour beer with hints of guava and vanilla, I believe. And then Con Fuego, they've used habanero peppers. So this could be quite spicy. Hard to say. It is a beer that the label is written with an ink pen. So I don't think this is like probably a beer that they've sold a lot of.
Beta test.
And is it? I wasn't.
I'm going to try it right now.
Looks like a hazy IPA.
It's, yeah.
That's,
it's
flat.
Very juicy looking.
Looks kind of like pee.
Pee comes in many flavors. Ooh, this is good. It's not spicy. Like, it's got a little kick afterwards. None of the flavors are knocking you over the head. Wow. Okay. I'm surprised. And now I'm tasting the guava. Wow. Damn. Homeboy knows how to make some beer. Wow.
Okay. Send more.
Thumbs up. Jesus, that's really good.
Every episode we could just, you know, kick him out. Talk about.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Sorry, Ian. You should be trying this one too.
Yeah. Keg rejects.
Okay. Kick the keg rejects. Keep them coming, Josh.
Unknown percentage. Who knows? Could be 10.
Oh, shit, that's some bootleg.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Moonshine.
With the ink pen. All right. Is that the hour? Good job, guys. Back episode 87 next week.
Jesus. Your fucking brain just got con fuego'd.
I think you're getting toasted.
Do we have any emails or other voicemails?
We do have another email.
We have an email from our Finland listener, Agent Columbo. I think that's what he identified himself as. He got back to us regarding, he was talking about the state monopoly on the coin-op games, and he says, I think tight regulation was just old paranoia about gambling, money laundering, etc., and they dragged their feet renewing the laws. For some reason, pinball machines were spared better, though. There's hundreds of those still gotten... okay, condition Twilight Zone for about 700 euros, I think that says, $800
wow.
in 2006.
Damn!
Okay. Due to the The demand people have been selling them back to the U.S. In my opinion,
I'd say that's probably gray market shit. I mean, we know people who they bring over containers from Italy of pinball machines, and with the shipping and everything, it's a sweet deal.
That's my creature, man. Was a re-import?
Yeah,
there you go.
Took the lyric.
It's not gray market.
I would say it's gray market. It's kind of gray markets, I suppose, when they're new.
I mean, they're originally.
It's not black market.
Originally sold or imported there, right?
So yeah, he's saying due to the demand, people have been selling back to the U.S. and he says it makes sense to send the container back with classic video games, since right now, as far as he knows, there's literally six in the entire country: Wizard of War, Video Pinball, Donkey Kong, Invaders Deluxe, Galaxian, Galaga, and he heard a rumor of an Asteroids, but that's about it. I'd asked him about that, and he said, and asked him, is that in the arcade that he was telling us about? And he says, yes, those are mostly the games at that one arcade. I'm sure there's some in private collections, but lacking online communities or events where they'd come up, who knows? So,
interesting.
Yeah.
This could be retirement.
It's kind of funny because the pins, right? Like the container pins, like I got my creature for like, you know, probably half the price that it sells for. Then again, it's routed to fuck, but it's a great way to get pens. And it seems like there's a shortage of vids there. I mean, like, we could do some trading, man.
So I'll trade
send off some Asteroids Deluxe.
Yeah, I'll trade for a
Twilight Zone
Asteroids Deluxe and or whatever era you want, as long as it's not too good of a game. And you send me a container full of Twilight Zone, and we'll just keep doing that until I don't need to work or fuck around with containers full of games anymore. That sounds like a great idea.
It's pretty common that I've seen, Coin-op Games will sell tons of classics to Europe because a lot of people don't ship out. So there's like a huge demand for international.
I think that was a big thing that R11 Chattanooga Pinball guy did.
Yeah.
So he's like, fuck you guys. I sell these things to Europe for 10 times as much as you
exactly.
We'll pay for this. Whatever. I don't give a shit.
I give a shit if it's like a rarish game, but if it's common stuff, I mean, why not share them? I mean, that country was deprived of a lot of classics, and it would be cool to get more of those out there. I mean, there's like a shit ton of Asteroids Deluxe around. I mean,
the other thing he sent was he made a WebAssembly build of MAME with the ROMs for the 720 No Bees patch that he made, so you can play that on a website similar to how you can play on the Internet Archive. And he said it would be cool for us to put that link in our show notes, so I will do that.
It's gonna break the internet.
I know. He also made it so you can control it with the mouse, which I tried tonight, and it's really difficult to play 720 by controlling the guy with your mouse, but it is doable.
What about with an ThinkPad track point?
The eraser head. Yeah, the fucking eraser head. It's fucking. It's difficult to control with the arcade controller. Come on now.
I think the eraser head would be the best.
Fuck yeah, I love the eraser head.
Yeah, maybe.
Eraser head hater.
So you can, we'll put this link in the show notes. He's got a link to the ROMs that you can download for yourself and give him a shot. So
just
thank you very much. And his last, the way he signed the last email was Ming the Merciless.
Nice.
So thank you, Ming.
Like from Flash Gordon.
Exactly.
Ming the Merciless.
Merciless, do your searches for you.
Wow. Yeah, you know, cool. So it's just a web link?
Yeah. It's good. In the
future, man.
It's in the email, man.
Some serious technology. And
maybe he could beam the code to your arcade machine.
Ian's weird world of people who talk in zeros and ones.
Yeah, that's my world.
And he found you.
Our world.
Okay.
I'm not going to play it right now.
Everybody play 720 right now. I just chatted them the link.
Ian just shared the link on the Skype. It was
take a drink of sour beer and play 720 with your eraser head.
He's somewhat wizard mode as well, I guess.
But let's talk about Puyan first.
And then
The MAME of the episode was up to me to choose. And having played Monster Bash last week, I almost went with Congo Bongo, since it is
Ian's favorite game.
Sega, same cabinet, and kind of terrible. But I have a soft spot for Congo Bongo, so I was like, yeah, I've kind of played that a lot. And for some reason, I don't know how this came to me, but I was thinking Puyan might be a fun game to play. I haven't spent much time with that, I can't say that I've liked it. I've never really understood it, so it was one of those games where it's like, maybe it's a good game, maybe it's a bad game, but it's definitely going to be an interesting game to talk about, because I don't know that any of us have spent much time with it, because I definitely hadn't. So Puyan from Konami, 1982, is our meme of the episode. Do we want to start off with scores, or do we want to start off talking about the game? What do you guys think?
I will start with scores.
Oh, start with scores?
Just get it over with. Okay, so in fourth place is Brandon with 28,350 points. Third place is Jordan with 38,300 points. Brian in number two with 47,200. And I am back in the champion seat this episode with 91,800.
Damn. Does that mean next episode is going to be a terrible game?
Let's pick some games.
I mean, we're playing MAME games that none of us own or ever want to own, so by definition, yes.
Yeah.
Well, this was a refreshing break, I would say.
Yeah.
Was solid.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a pretty fun game. I'm going to read this little blurb from the flyer. One day in the forest, a group of wolves attacked the pig's house where Mother Pig, Mama, and her little piggies, Puyans, were living peacefully. Mama fought against the wolves to protect Puyans using arrows and meat. For all her efforts, however, some Puyans were kidnapped. Hating the wolves, Mama bravely goes to the wolves' lair to rescue Puyans. Is she able to beat the wolves and take Puyans back home? Well, I don't know. Is she?
Between a mama and her kids.
This is a... interesting game.
The thing I wanted to say is, why would they mention Family of Pigs and then pigs itself, but then segue into my fun fucking fact is that Puyan means little pigs, so it's funny how the flyer uses the title of the Japanese name for little pigs with saying
it's
pigs.
It's like Manos, the hands of fate, right? Because Manos means hands in Spanish.
Exactly, yes. It's just funny. I guess you can't change the title if you license the game, but by translating it in English.
That's not true.
Well, yeah. It seems like you could.
Like, one of my favorite terrible video game titles, Zaned Selena, not making this up, got renamed as Solar Warrior in the U.S. And it's like the original is XAIN'D, Zaned Selena, and possibly the worst named video game ever.
I think they would have had a hit on their hands if they would have stuck with it.
It's a shooter. It's actually a kind of a good shooter, right?
It's not bad. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is,
and this game is also kind of a shooter.
Yeah.
Again, that is.
It is. But it seems way cooler than a shooter to me. Anyhow, I liked it.
I was going to quickly say that this is a Stern licensed game in the U.S. Stern Seaberg at the time, and so it's in that typical like Bagman style cabinet that you see.
What else came in that?
Rescue, I think maybe.
It's
kind of similar to Cliffhanger, with that wraparound marquee.
Cliffhanger doesn't have the extra doors and stuff. Cliffhanger had like extra doors on it.
I know.
How Berserk did with the long skinny door where you pull it out. But yeah, this is like the evolution of no more weird doors on the front.
Yeah, this is your typical Bagman whatever cab.
The flyer said Puyan features Stern's famous works in a drawer cabinet designed for added security. Stern now uses over under cash box, backlit panels, and colorful graphics for eye appeal. So I guess the over-under cash box is so your employees can't steal all your money.
Yeah, you give them the key to the coin deck, but not the cash.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's kind of funny, but I've never understood that concept until you just explained it. I didn't realize that was like an effort to do that. But
yeah, because the early stuff, it was one key, and you get the coin mechs and the cash. So
like
coin mechs,
like the Atari cabs and stuff, the early Atari stuff.
And then they decided, oh, wait, I keep the bottom key. You can have it.
You fucking skimming off me, bitch? Yeah, the I actually like this cap, and I like the marquees and stuff on this series. And the pull-out drawer, like in Bagman's, pretty cool. It's like at the very bottom of the cap.
Is it a drawer on the bottom or drawer on the back?
Front? It's the very bottom front. Yeah.
In the front. Okay, so I was wrong. But not
I like the front drawer setups. That's pretty nice. Wizard of War has that same deal on the upright. Yeah. It's great.
Taito Double Dragon is my one cabinet out of however many I have that has a drawer in the front. And, yeah, that's a cool deal.
Very convenient.
Yeah, so this is originally a Konami game, Z80 based.
Bunch of people.
Yeah. And yeah, so let's get into gameplay.
AY chip for the sound.
Yep.
So this is kind of it's essentially a fixed shooter, but it has an unusual setup where you control the mama pig in an elevator, which some of her baby pigs manually winch up and down the screen. And it's on the right-hand side of the screen, and you shoot left, which I think is, like I said, kind of an uncommon setup, especially in a vertical game where typically you'd be down at the bottom. But there is a cliff up on the top, and wolves, they float down grabbing balloons, and you have to winch up and down the elevator and shoot them with arrows and meat. The meat part of this game, I really don't get, and it's weird and a little disturbing. Like, it's the non-specific meat, I think, that really does it for me. Like, what kind of meat is it? Is it some of the baby pigs that misbehaved? Who knows?
Yeah,
I think it's fucking awesome.
I would believe it's the beef. It's beef.
Brian, for being a vegan, you sure like a lot of fucking meat-based games.
I know, that's what Jordan was saying earlier, that this is a total game for me because I've got Food Fight, I've got Burger Times. It's all the food-related games.
Yeah.
This one's got meat in it. So
meat.
Being vegan, it's got to be like Beyond Meat or something.
Yeah. Beyond Slab of Meat.
It's all about the beef or the meat.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird that they made it a piece of meat as like the special weapon in this one. It's like kind of out of left field.
Like it could
be
a rock.
It be just like a like a rock.
Everybody else is throwing rocks and fruit, and you're throwing like a slab of beef.
Like imagine if you're in your kitchen, like, and someone comes in with a balloon. You're gonna throw a fucking slab of meat to pop the balloon, or you're gonna throw like a fucking knife or something.
And also, you're throwing it at wolves. Why don't they eat the meat? Like, why are they? It makes no sense. It's weird.
It could be a fireball. It could be anything. A rock. I mean,
so many things can be.
It's typical Japanese
ninja stuff
design, right? I mean, I think it's really cool though. Like, it has good sound, you know. And it's the meat. The thing I want to know is what
meat has good sound.
The meat does have good sound.
Meat has good sound. Meat sounds good flying through the air.
Okay, so we should. I want to talk a little more about how the game actually works before we get too far down into like rat holding on the meat. As you're winching up and down intermittently at the very top of the elevator is a piece of meat that appears and flashes. And when you go up and grab it, then you can throw that one piece of meat. And whereas the arrows shoot straight from right to left, the meat is heavier and so it goes in an arc. And that allows you to get multiple wolves at a time. Normally, your main weapon is the arrow, and you have to shoot the balloons so the wolves fall to their death. With the meat, you can hit either the wolf or the balloon, and I think you get 200 points for shooting the balloon off the wolf. But when you use the meat, then your score doubles each time it hits one, so I think... Does it start at 200 or is it 400, 800, and then everything else is 1600?
I think it's 4, 8, 6.
Yeah, I think that sounds right. Okay.
It's like the Pac-Man ghosting. It's like a cumulative, just keeps on comboing up. And then,
but you can only do 4 ghosts in Pac-Man, whereas you can get multiple 1600s off this.
Yeah, just like the combo. And then Jordan exploited it by also hitting an optional guy that wasn't a part of that, and that add to that bonus.
Well, the meat is going on. If you nail another one with your arrow at the same time, you can get another 1600.
So as the wolves are floating down, they will throw rocks at Mama Pig. And this has kind of an interesting mechanic where if they hit the top or the bottom of the elevator, they bounce off. Whereas if they hit Mama Pig, then she falls out and dies and you lose a life. When the wolves reach the bottom, they start climbing up a ladder that is just to the right of Mama Pig's elevator. And they'll hang out there. And if they, I think if the ladders fill up, then they get up to the pigs that are working the elevator and then you die. But I don't know.
They fill up the ladders and it just makes it harder for you because you have to work between like those gaps, but you can still
they try
the
to bite you.
Yeah. They will bite you and, eat Mama Pig. So I think that's kind of an interesting mechanic where you don't lose immediately. You get a second chance, but it gets harder. Yeah. And then the second screen is the opposite, where there are... So here's the thing I didn't realize until I played this a couple times, which is that there's a cutscene after the first board, or round, rather. And on the second round, there's some pigs in a cage at the bottom, and a bunch of wolves float up on balloons instead of floating down. But in the cutscene in between, it says, you know, two pigs captured or whatever. But even if you get through the first round perfectly and nothing happens, two pigs get captured. I was like, why the fuck are they getting captured when I did it perfectly? But it's not what happened in the first round. It's setting up the second round. So two of them get captured and put in a cage, and then you have to attack all of the wolves and then you rescue them.
Well, I thought it had something to do with the opening screen after you coin up and it's like, they take two of the pigs. I thought maybe it was those two that they had captured already.
Yeah, I think I've seen numbers greater than two. I think I've seen three captured as well.
Yeah, so
if the wolves come down in the first round.
If they come down in the first round, they can capture more pigs. And then you'll go to the second screen. It'll say four or five pigs captured. And then apparently you get a better bonus at the end of the second screen if they have captured some pigs, so that could be like a ultimate point pressing thing to let a few pigs down. I don't know. I'm theorizing at this point.
That's kind of an interesting risk reward scenario.
And bonuses at the end if it's worth it, you know.
So on the second board, they float up, and it's a little bit harder because some of the balloons take two hits to pop. The first hit will make them start floating up more slowly, and then the second hit will make them fall. And there's also the boss wolf, which you have to hit four times in order to defeat. And when, I think, seven wolves get up to the top, the whole point of this is they're trying to push a boulder down onto Mama Pig, but one can't push the boulder because it's too heavy. So once, seven get up there, they can push it onto her, and she dies. And then if you pass that level, then there's a bonus level where the only thing you can do is throw meat. You get, I think, 100 points per meat and then some number of points per wolf. And you can also rack up some combos on that.
So on the regular levels, when you get the meat, you have to throw that next. So you have to plan it out a little bit if you don't want to throw it. Because when I first started playing this game, I thought that it was a two-button game and there was like a meat button. But there's no meat button. It's just one button.
Fucking budget cuts, man. I swear.
Episode title, Meat Button.
Meat Button.
Meat Button. There's a mod. I'm going to make a mod called the Meat Button mod. Yeah.
And the other thing is that sometimes the wolves will deflect your arrows. They've got little shields or something, and they kind of put them up, bing, and the arrows will shoot straight downward. So if there's something underneath those wolves, it'll hit them. So sometimes when they were throwing the fruit out, if the fruit was underneath them and you would hit the wolf and it deflected it, it would go straight down. It would still hit whatever's directly underneath that wolf on his balloon.
Yeah, after you finish the first three rounds, then things get harder. And on round four, they drop some strawberries, which are 200 points per shot if you hit them. And I think that's what you're saying, is if they block your arrow, then it can travel down and hit a strawberry. And then if you make it to round five, they have a bunch of balloons that float up, and they're still only worth 50 points, but they just kind of get in the way of hitting the wolves that you want. You can also shoot the rocks that the wolves throw at you for 200 points each, but I found that they're very hard to hit because they don't shoot straight. They have an arc to them, so they're very hard to hit, and 200 points I don't think is worth it because I got killed more often than not.
Man, there's a lot of strategy and a lot going on and a lot of depth, actually, that makes this game really cool. Like, you think... It was a true cold start challenge for me on this one. I haven't played it for a long time, and I was expecting it to be a little bit easier. And the thing that threw me off about the gameplay was, like, you want to the levels where they're, you know, the start where they're floating down, you want to kind of be a little bit below them, right, so that you can take their rocks basically on the top of your elevator. And then on the reverse levels, you want to be above them. And so there's, like, a lot of gameplay variation. Even though it's only two different levels, it's cool how they just doing that. You know, it's like the reverse mirror track on racing games, basically, where, like, it changes the whole game. And it's actually pretty cool.
It is. Much cooler than any just standard shooter, I think. It's a shooter and just add a lot more to it to make it not seem like a shooter.
Well, I think that's the thing that is interesting about this, is that you can almost play it like a normal shooter, but there's that much more depth if you want to get into it as well. And I think that's a pretty good way of structuring your game, even if you do have literal mystery meat in it.
Yeah, there's times when a bunch of the wolves will go at once and you can kind of tell that you're going to get a good arc and be able to hit a lot of them. And I think one of the things that psychs me out on when I was doing that is I would get the meat and I was like, set that shot up and I would shoot it. And then I would just be watching what I get. And then that's when they would throw a lot of rocks at me. And that's if you're not paying attention, then because you're like, it's kind of like when you play Missile Command and you're like shooting the missiles out and you're kind of like waiting to see if they hit. But what you really need to do is just shoot them and keep moving. So the same with this one, it's like you shoot the meat and just don't worry about it. It's going to hit what it's going to hit and just keep, you know, making sure that you don't get hit by rocks.
You sit back and admire it because it's so sweet. That's like the best part of the game is watching meat.
You want to watch. You want to watch
sweet meat. Yeah, it arcs and it hits, and you see that go up to 1600, maybe 600 again, and it's like, oh fuck, this is great. You know, compared to 100, 200, 200, 200. You know, this is like, yeah, this is where the game's at. So it's kind of part of. I think they kind of program that in there. They know you're going to stop and watch that.
Mm-hmm. That's actually what happened to me. That's why I died early. I set up that fucking sweet meat shot and got fucking jacked.
They definitely have it set up in a way where, again, you're balancing that risk and reward. Because, for one, I think a lot of the patterns that the wolves come down in, you can't get all of them with a single meat shot. You end up with one or two that it doesn't hit. So you got to be watching out for that last one. And also it's timed such that very close to the time when you can hurl your meat at them, they all throw a volley of rocks at you. So a lot of times I'd be like, okay, I'm lining up this shot and, you know, I shoot and then they almost immediately hurl three or four rocks right at you. And then, oh shit, you got to watch out because you're going to get beefed.
Man, the titles just keep coming. I'm taking all these down. I've got sweet meat, meat button, meat shot, hurl your meat, and what was that last one?
Beefed.
Got beefed.
I actually thought of the title actually way before this episode, and it's from the Smiths album, Meat is Murder.
Oh my god, that's so good.
Meat Manifesto.
They just keep coming.
It's a band. They're good.
Oh yes.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think the reason why I beefed out so soon was that I was anticipating the movement to be a little bit faster. So after Ian said, I shot that shot and I was watching it, the trajectory, waiting for it to go, oh, am I going to get all five of those guys or what? And then they threw all those fucking rocks and I just couldn't react fast enough. And I'm like, god damn it. And I just kept on doing that. I didn't learn right because I only played one game, but I think it would have done a lot better if I had a couple of games in. And then also you think that, you know, you have to be really quick on the the shooting button with the arrows. Otherwise, they fucking float down really fast. You have to line up your shots. Yeah. And Ian had a really good rhythm with the hitting those fucking strawberries. And
yeah.
Two shots on the screen at once. I noticed that. Two arrows on
the screen. Yep. Yeah. I think what's interesting about this game to me from a shooter perspective is that so many shooter games, the enemies are flying right at you, and the enemies never come at you in this. You know, they're always on a completely separate trajectory, and if they get to the bottom, it's not the end of the game. You don't lose a life. It just ramps up the difficulty. And I think that, to me, is the twist to this game that makes it, you know, unique and replayable.
Yeah, but yeah, because most shooters, right, they'll... you know, like a ship will fly by, right? And they'll just, you basically lose points because it doesn't come back. But this, it actually tortures you because it's making it harder, right? This is a really cool design element, I think.
Yeah, I think two other elements that I really appreciated in this game is there's a set number of wolves per level, and there's a number up in the upper left that shows you how many are left. So you have that, you know how far you are through the level, which I think is something that is unusual, and I appreciate it. And I forget the other thing. when on the second level, if you miss the boss, then it adds 5 more wolves. So again, it'll ramp it up a bit in that case. Oh, yeah, okay. The other thing is that if you, like, I think it's 40 or 50 per level, depending. If you hit like 10 of them, and then you die, you don't have to start from the beginning. You only have to get the same number that was remaining. Yeah, and I think
that's nice.
That's really key. I think this game would be excruciating if you had to start all the way over from nothing at the beginning. But the number of enemies, you know, however many you got. And if there are any wolves up on the ladder, those go away. So it eases up a little bit. And I think that kind of ebb and flow of difficulty really does make this a much more enjoyable game than a lot of games that came out in 1982. Like, I think this feels pretty classic to me for being an 82 release.
Yeah, they could have been brutal and just reset the whole thing, and they probably sacrificed spelling the word the word number to fit that in.
Yeah. NBR.
NBR.
Yeah. NBR of pigs. So we talked about the cabinet, gameplay, music. Let's talk about music, sound effects.
There's nothing annoying. They didn't have an annoying song going on that I could tell.
I like
The song is pretty pleasant.
Yeah, and I like the wolf sound.
The thing that really got me about this game on the sounds is that the coin up sound sounds almost exactly like the spinner on Flight 2000. It has that like do 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 kind of sound. Just, like, it reminds me of hitting a spinner in an early 80s solid state pinball.
It is a Stern.
That'd be funny.
Well, it's Konami. Yeah.
I know. Yeah.
It's got some cutscenes. It's got like a scene at the beginning. It's like you don't just start straight away. So you see the wolves stealing the babies. And there's also at the end of the level, your pig mama goes to the bottom and she gets her babies. At least in the second level, she gets her babies, and they go into the elevator and go up. I can't remember. Does that happen in the first level, or does she just go to the bottom? I can't remember now.
I don't think there's... I think it just goes straight into the cutscene after you finish the first level. I kind of don't... I think the cutscene right as you start the game is too long.
Yeah.
That's a thing that I found annoying. I wish you could cancel it or it was shorter.
I would agree with that, too. That's the one thing. It's like every time. It's like, okay, I don't need to see this. But then I thought, you know what? Just get better at the goddamn game, and then you can just play it for longer and not have to restart it all the time.
Yeah, that's the thing, too, is the games last pretty long. Well, except for mine, but...
Well, speaking of that, too, at the end, when you put your high score up, it tells you how long you played the game. I think my games were like 3 minutes and something. But yeah, it tells you. So that's pretty cool.
I agree. That is a unique game feature that I think is pretty neat.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Does it save the time on the high score table? I can't remember.
I don't think it saves the time. It just shows you in the game.
Yeah, somebody look. It seems
I'm
like
booting it right now.
I heard a rumor about this game back in the day. Instead of putting quarters on the bezel, they just put slabs of bacon to preserve their spot.
Yeah, hell yeah.
It does keep your time.
That's fucking awesome. That's cool.
Salami chunks in the they have the salami nuggets.
Like pepperoni.
Yeah, and you can just rest them up on the bezel.
Yeah, the little fucking salami rounds, little slices. Yeah.
Of course, if it was in a high-class joint, you had to put prosciutto up on that.
It fucking falls over and it's all greasy all over the machine. Fucking wild.
I think Jordan was mentioning this during gameplay, is that the top right-hand portion of the screen, there's a flag with the round number in it, but the round number is also in the bottom right-hand corner of the screen, and your lives are very inconspicuous down in the very middle of the bottom. So you might kind of think, oh, I've got one life left because there's a flag that says one on it, but that's actually the round number.
Yeah, they fucked up there, but I don't think they fucked up anywhere else, really.
Yeah, otherwise it's pretty good.
I don't think it's a fuck-up. It's just taking some time to understand
No, you can't tell how many men you have because it's some stupid little blob at the bottom when you have, like, nice-looking numbers.
It's a pig space. here's the other thing I thought is kind of funny about this.
He treats it as a slab of meat.
When you finish the second round or, you know, the one where you're in the wolf's lair and they're floating up, there's the little cutscene animation where Mom Fig goes down to the bottom and walks across and unlocks the cage to get her babies and then walks over to the elevator. And Mama goes into the elevator. Then one pig goes into the elevator, and you're like, wow, how are the other ones going to fit in there? And then the cutscene's over. They're like, we can't figure out how to make them fit in there. Whatever.
God damn it.
On to the next level.
Yeah. Okay. This is another one of those games that I played on C64. I played the 64 port of this a fair amount.
It
has been a very, very long time since I've done that. So I don't think I've ever played the actual original arcade version. Definitely never played the cabinet, and I don't think I've played it in MAME before today either.
I played it on Arcade SD before today, as far as I remember. I don't know. I can't recall. Like, it was just kind of one of those extra games. Like, oh, this is kind of cool, but I want to play something else. And I didn't really know. And then today I kind of looked into it. I'm like, oh, fuck, this is a cool game.
Yeah.
I want you to tell me your rating of this game, Jordan, and why.
This coins up. Yeah, no problem. This is a great game.
That's it?
Yeah.
Why is it great to you?
Because it's fun to play, and it's deep, and it makes you want to play it over and over and over again. I mean, it's a good game. And the meat shot, it's all about the meat shot. Lob that beef, and you get that. Man, it's good. It's very satisfying. It's like the three ships in a row in Galaxian. I mean, it's just classic to just watch those points rack up, or a five or ten, you know, a brainwave in Robotron when you've got it up to 800 and you just keep getting 800, 800, 400, whatever it is. But when you're
5,000?
5,000, there you go. You make it to the top and then you keep shooting them, and then it's, yeah, like every second man or every second guy you're killing is like getting you, or every third one is getting you, man, whatever. It's just one of those like great, you know, risk and reward things where, well, there's not much of a risk to that one. It's just, there is, because you do have to set yourself up and you kind of just throw it all out on the line. It's like, okay, this is it. Here's the shot. Boom, 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 boom. And you just watch those points rack up. So, yep, that's what does it for me. Like that big, big payout right there.
Real nice. Ian?
I'm coins up on this game. It was a lot more fun than I remember the 64 port being, and I'm not sure if that's because I'm old now and can appreciate it more, or I'm just focused on it, but I thought it was really good. I think it's a very well-balanced game, especially for 1982. So many 1982 games are very unbalanced or very overcomplicated, and this really hits a sweet spot of being fun to play and has some good depth but isn't totally confusing and arbitrary, except for the meat. So the meat is very arbitrary, so I'm coins up on it. I will ding it a little bit because it is patternable. This is a thing I was noticing is like they always come down in the same pattern. They always throw at the same time. And that's the thing where, I mean, I'm not a high score dude. Like, I think they look down on patternable games a lot. But I felt, you know, I was playing it a little bit over the last couple days, and it started to feel a little samey on that timeline. I think, you know, playing it for a half hour, it's got good replay value, but I don't think it's a game I'd put in my collection. I don't think it has years worth of staying power. So I have to ding it a little bit for that, but I had a good time. I think it's underrated for sure. Good so point. Coins up for me.
Brian.
Yeah, I coins up this one. This is one that I probably wouldn't have thought that I would coins up from just the experiences I've had with it, which isn't much. I never, like I said, never spent much time with this game, but unlike Monster Bash, which we coins down, which is not fun to play and not fun to do the tasks that you're supposed to do, this one is definitely has some good reward to it and makes you want it. It definitely has the easy to learn, hard to master, probably. Maybe depending on how much higher the levels go, maybe there's less pattern based. I mean, you can kind of detect some, like when a lot of the wolves are coming down at one time, you're like, okay, this is probably going to be a place where I could do the meat shot, stuff like that. But perhaps like as you go further, you know, even just going through like the first stages and getting to the, you know, rounding back to the first one, it starts getting pretty hard. So, yeah. Yep, I coins up this one.
Brandon. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, meat. I'm going to 4 out of 4 meats. Coins up for me. fucking USDA choice coins up. I was thinking about it when Ian was saying it. It's kind of gets the samey feeling where there's depth in the gameplay, but there's not a ton of variation. So I could see that in a permanent collection, but I actually like it a lot. Because there's like a lot of depth within those levels and like a lot of variation of what you can do. But yeah, I don't think it's a long, like if you had like 10 game, like room for like 5 games, you know, I think it's a keeper, but it's good. And when you're talking about the whole samey thing, yeah, like they all drop the same way. The cool thing I like about Robotron, for example, is that it's really intense. It just starts out, there's no like waiting for people to assemble and drop down. It's just like, to me, like that's what the shooters need to be, like super engaging. And I guess this really doesn't have that, but it is put together well. So has like a lot of cool animations that we didn't talk about. A lot of details in the characters, good sounds. I like how the points, it seems like it could be a really high scoring game. Like in, even if you don't do that well, you know, your score is pretty good. So it's kind of like pinball, you know, like when there's a game that scores super low, it's not that fun. But if it's a game more like, you know, like Attack from Mars, where you get millions and millions and the scale's all bonkers.
As far as you get scores, I'm sorry to interrupt, but like Ian scores like 3 times as much as some of us. And he got to like basically a bonus round and then partway through one more level. So,
yeah.
The scores ramp up pretty quick there if you get to the bone.
Yeah, and I like that though because it makes you want to go for more. I think like even though the score mechanic's not really that important in the like back in the day when you're putting money in the machine, like it's cool to, you know, like if you play like Asteroids Deluxe, for example, it's hard to get up to like, you know, 45K, right? But to me, like that's a big factor of scores. Yeah, I think it's just an enjoyable game and it's put together good. It's not like a fucking janky ass game that we've been playing like the last couple of ones. It's actually a quality title. So yeah, coins up. I think if I ever get a deal on it, I would pick one up. But I don't think it would ever be a keeper for sure though.
Get it. Put it in old Milwaukee.
Meet it.
I've never seen one for sale that I can remember, or maybe I just wasn't paying attention that it didn't seem cool enough for me that I didn't know. Is this thing on the 1961 or something.
I think it is.
I kind of think it
is. 1982 B-list title. I mean, they just probably didn't make very many of them, especially like a B-list title from Stern, who was not like a top manufacturer, especially in 82.
Yeah, a lot of the Stern stuff, I don't think it had high production, but I don't think they're super rare either. It's just like there probably was a shit ton of these cabs were converted to other stuff. I think more so in the Stern in the Stern case. Yeah. So you'll probably see a lot of like loose PCBs, but
Why have I seen 10 Bagmans for sale? But
well, it's the same cab, just fucking paint it, and yeah. I guess good luck finding the marquee. But
I'm just saying, this is way better than Bagman.
Fuck yeah, just
low bar,
more enjoyable for sure.
Same company, it's the same era, and I've
what
seen
other
Bagman?
But Bagman was a Stern actual title. Right.
Yeah. What other Stern licensed other Konami titles? Right.
They did
Scramble. That was Konami, right? Scramble and Super Cobra.
Yeah, those were earlier though. These are like the later run. Yeah. Let me look.
So you got The End, Scramble, Super Cobra, Turtles, Strategy X. These are all licensed from Konami. Astro Invader.
Fucked it a lot.
It's kind of funny that.
Didn't Sega do Astro Invader as well? Sega had two Astros. I think they had Astro. Maybe it was something.
They did Astro Fighter.
Astro Fighter, that's it. And, sorry.
Yeah.
Astro Blaster, which was the good one.
Yeah.
And Astro Fighter. Yeah.
Yeah. They released a lot of Konami games. Yeah. Tutankham, Puyan, Frenzy. Amidar.
That's a good game.
Jungler. I've never heard of that one. Is that like Jungle
Hunt? Oh, that was on my list of games to play. It's weird.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah. It's your turn, man.
That's right.
But apparently, I've been picking crappy games the last couple months.
We got to put it in perspective. Good. You gotta beef it up, Ian.
Yeah. It says Anteater developed by Stern and released by Tago Electronics. I didn't know that Stern developed Anteater.
God, one of the best games they ever made.
That's a good game.
Oh, also Lost Tomb, which that's not that good, but that's an actual Stern developed game. Yeah, it seems like Konami and had a big influence on. Stern didn't really do the best in licensing or like releasing arcade games, but they wanted to get in on the action.
Yeah, their own games weren't as good. The Konami ones, pretty.
Oh yeah,
they kind of lost the way after Berserk.
What about Frenzy?
Well, Konami licensed to a bunch of other companies too, right? Like Gyrus is a
Sega.
Konami title. Time Pilot. And then from 89, they just started cranking out beat 'em ups.
Dance Dance Revolution.
Beat 'em and meet 'ems.
Got the good kind of pads, man, with the DB2 connected.
No, I just got some USB ones. PlayStation or whatever.
But they're pro, man, let me tell you.
Just roll them up and fling them out.
No, these have got the metal on them, man. They go for big money.
DB9 ports.
Yeah.
That's how you know it's the good shit.
Yeah.
All right. So that's Puyan.
All right, Puyan. So next time, Ian's game. Get ready.
Ian, you better beef it up, man.
All right. Well, it sucks because I had some. I wanted to pick some like Neo Geo titles or some JAMA shit that I have PCBs for because I can run hardware. But now we're doing this. I don't want to do those on MAME if I got the hardware.
Yeah.
I pick some bullshit.
It's JAMA though, so
Skype on your Neo Geo.
What?
Skio Geo.
Skype on your Neo Geo.
Skype on your Neo.
Oh yeah, I got it on Wi-Fi and everything.
Load Skype on your 60-to-1.
Your JAMA PCB of Skype.
Internet connected high score save kit. You know, it does Skype too.
To be honest, though, I think JAMA games and Neo Geo stuff, I think it's fine to do, because those are usually emulated pretty well and usually always use standard controls anyways.
Oh, I forgot to announce I drank the other beer now, too.
I finished my beer.
Yeah, very good. No complaints.
I just did just now. It's good.
Sounds like you need more.
Thanks, Josh. Josh, send more.
Josh, we need more.
Overnight or over,
over
10 minutes.
Yeah, 10 minutes. Now.
I don't know. I like playing the Neo Geo on the cabinet. Yeah. So
all right.
I want to do like... I got Windjammers. That'd be a good one, I think. Be pretty fun.
When the hell are we going to be able to record together again? Jesus Christ.
Next year, my friend.
Windjammer
fucking bullshit. Like,
Windjammer sounds like you're trying to fart and then someone sticks up your butt.
sticks a slab of meat up your butt and jams your wind.
Yeah, that'll be what it's like if you play me, son. Windjammers is like Pong, basically, but it's a really good Pong.
Yeah.
Okay. Brian, can I nominate you to play this while we watch? Let's do it like that, because you know how to play this game and I don't.
Sure. All right, so we're playing this hidden or Beezless ROMs of 720. And I'm attempting to do it via the mouse. Hard. The soundtrack on this game is the best. I can just cruise.
Fucking car.
Hey, good choice, kid. You're gonna love it.
That green thing, is that a bee?
No, that's money. Money.
Money.
Money. Gonna buy more gear.
Damn, that reverb on that fucking car, man.
720.
Jesus Christ.
Some of the fucking green sounds, that Yamaha chip. That,
yeah.
It's really... Yeah.
FM synth. Are you gonna burn those ROMs and put them in your cab?
I don't know.
Can you? That would be. That's the only way to really play that.
The thing is, though, is now that I'm seeing you play it with no bees, it's like, do you really want to spend that much time?
Not yeah, really. I would, because I always sucked at it. I think I went through all the parks though and got to the second level. Yeah. It's hard though.
Yeah, I've gone all the way through it.
Well, you're good.
But it's a fun game. Yeah, the soundtrack on that game is amazing. It's like one of the best parts of it.
Yeah. I think System 1 games have the Yamaha synth chip as well. Paperboy definitely does. And then the cop game.
Yeah, I've seen people speculate on Clav about how the Paperboy is the character in 720. So after he delivered all his papers, he went skateboarding.
It's possible.
But yeah, that's
bicycle
a super
hack for 720.
Change hack to Paperboy.
Yeah, change the skateboard to a bicycle.
Does he have blonde hair and freckles? Because Paperboy does.
Yeah, you dressed up like him, you would know.
I do.
But yeah, that's a cool. It's a cool ROM hack there. So, thanks, Agent Columbo, for sending that over.
Yeah, that's cool.
And we'll make that available to everybody, right? We'll put that on.
The link will be in the show notes, and you can download the ROMs.
You ever played 720 without bees? Here is your chance. I'm going to try.
Change the background to Corn Rejects logos.
They can pay me to play 720 without bees. Good idea.
Yeah, that's really cool that people can mod stuff. And, it's interesting to see how that game would be without that timer aspect. Of course, they wouldn't make any money, but,
stick, making that go round and round.
Yeah. It doesn't work as well.
That'd be, easy. Then you could break your joint instead of your shoulder.
Yeah, one of the other things he said in the email, he was like, exercising the chameleon might be fun. I'll take a look. No promises, though. G80 CPU scrambling security scheme looks annoying. We were talking about, taking the chameleon man out of Monster Bash.
Can you just replace him with someone worth, creature or something?
Yep.
Well, that's just a sprite swap at that point. But.
So you guys want to talk about any game room updates? Anybody got any?
Yeah. No reason to have a game room. You can't have people over.
You have a game room if you can't have updates.
Well, I mean, I know what I need to do. I guess I'll talk about my no update is I haven't done anything.
Tell us your to-do list.
Okay. Order a bunch of fucking... op amps for Space Invaders to get the sounds working good. I needed a new bezel. I need to put all the leg levers on Joust and Space Invaders. That's it. And then need to clean a little bit more to fit some more games that are coming up whenever that happens. so, and then hopefully we'll have two new games to play whenever we can do that.
Whoop, whoop.
That's yeah, I have no game room updates. Been just surviving, you know, as one does. Yep. But I do have one or two not game room updates.
Do it.
I got my trailer all ship shape. I needed some new tires and some crappy wood replaced, but it is back in business, so I nice. Can haul some games now. And I just got my MR2. I have an 89 MR2, which I just got back from the shop, which had some long overdue maintenance done on it. So, not video games, but certainly of the era. And I also did a whole bunch of reorganization in my warehouse. So, I got a little bit of floor space in there and some shit's out the way. So, all that stuff is pretty good. But I haven't had too much time for games over the last couple months.
Same. Not time at all. Thought I would, but I don't.
Yeah, it's like we got all this time back from not commuting and all that other shit, but
it doesn't.
Man, I get done with work and I'm like, I'm just gonna fucking lay down.
Exactly. Yeah. I know. It's like you have that time, but you don't, and it's like you know, you're like helping your kids with school and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So you cleaned up some room in the warehouse. You going to bring some stuff back home then, or?
No. I just
the opposite.
Made it more efficient in the warehouse space. But I don't really have any room in my game room for much else. I think I'm pretty okay with what I have in here right now. Maybe I'll rotate some stuff through. I don't know, I might swap out like Space Zap for Galaxian at some point. That seems like might be a good swap to do. But no, I'm pretty set with how things are at the moment.
Yeah. I would definitely, if I was you, I would move some of the pins around more. But, you know, because, you know, you have, like, Monster Bash and all that stuff. I don't know.
Scared Stiff, too, right?
Yeah.
Yep, I got Monster Bash, Scared Stiff, Bram Stoker's Dracula, and Centaur all out there. And I think I found the keys for Centaur because when I moved it there from my old office, I misplaced them. But I think I found them.
Yeah, that's one thing I want to definitely do is make... I need room for one more... Well, I have room, probably, if I can rearrange things for one more pin. But I would like to have one more to vary it up, you know, with creature.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know, when the kids are with their mom, I will sometimes go work for a day out of the warehouse, like tethered to my phone or using the open Wi-Fi from someone who's nearby. So that's I get some decent time down there to play the games that are up and running.
Yeah, it's,
Jordan.
It's, well, yeah,
oh, sorry,
enough,
sorry, Jordan? I'm not home. I don't
go
know.
Go ahead, Brian. Sorry.
I work during the day and then come home, hang out with Liz at night. And then just we go camp on every weekend, and I work 4 days a week, so I have 3 day weekends, and then try to take a lot of time off. And I've just been traveling a lot of national parks and stuff like that. And it's just we can't have people over, so I don't feel, you know, an arcade vibe. You know, maybe once they'll come down to play a game or something, but yeah, it's not a lot of game room update for me.
Yeah, that's the thing is like my home office, I guess, is the game room, and I don't even turn them on. I don't have time, which sucks. But yeah, when you can't share it, it's tough, right? So
yeah, it really I start to lose the whole point of the whole thing. But yeah, it'll change. It'll get better.
Yeah, don't sell all your games now.
Well, I don't need any money, so I'm not gonna
fucking.
If I ever decide to. I'm just tired of having a house. I want to move somewhere small. Then I guess that's when I'll just probably sell them all or store them all. I don't know. But I don't see a point of storing them all. I'd rather have it set up to where people can enjoy them. So But yeah, just hoping, you know, the good news today, Pfizer's got the vaccine, 90% efficacy. That's huge. Not to make our podcast out about COVID-19, but yeah, it's relevant in these times.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a little bit about COVID-19, whether we want it to be or not, because we're all here on Skype.
Before the pandemic ends, Jordan will just have his Mega Touch left, and
it'll be permanently mounted in the truck.
Yeah. Name of the episode every episode.
No, I definitely have a, you know, there's a list of games I just can't get rid of. I don't know that I would just, I don't know what I'd do. I'd just stick them somewhere. Even if I lived in the truck in a Mexican beach or whatever, I would have a few games that I'm just not going to get rid of, like Gravatar or whatever.
You're in too deep. You can't get out now. Sorry.
Just a try. I don't know. There'd be a few.
Oh, I had one more thing, which is I put all my Neo Geo carts on a bookshelf. there you go. Because they've been in a milk crate, most of them, for a bit. But I got a big-ass bookshelf, and my other one got demoted. And so now I was like, oh, I definitely have space for like all this and maybe some of my handhelds and whatever. And nope, it's all full of Neo Geo carts.
Nice.
I counted them. I got like 70-ish.
Damn.
Wow. Nice.
And what is the total count, do you know, offhand?
I don't know the total. I think that's on the order of half the catalog. But it's like minus one or two, it's every one that I actually like.
And all non-boots?
All non-boots. I don't do boots.
Yeah, buddy. Brian?
Yeah, so I've been doing a few things. I think I mentioned before that the Tempest was down. The 6100 wasn't working.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So I was working on that, and it seemed to be the low... Is it the low voltage section?
Low voltage LV stands power for, right? Supply.
Yeah, so it seemed like that section was giving me problems. So what I did was took the plunge and put the LV2000 on there, which worked. So it got it back working. The one thing that's weird about it right now, I think that I've told some of you guys on chat, is that the vectors seem a little shaky, especially on the top and the bottom of the screen. And I'm hoping that maybe that's due to bad pots on the game board. So I'm thinking my next step is going to replace all the pots on the game board to see if that helps. It's not terrible, but it's definitely, you notice it, the credits and the high score on the bottom and your score at the top. It's just the vectors don't seem quite stable. They're not like, you know, solid. So I need...
Game board thing. What do you think, Ian?
Was it doing it before the monitor went down?
I don't think so. I think I would have noticed it if it was doing that. Because that's the first thing I noticed.
Yeah.
Was that. So
I don't think that problem just happens in that short a time frame. So, yeah. Put it on the scope. See if you see the same thing on the scope.
Test mode.
Yeah, test mode. It does it the same thing. So yeah. But what I was noticing as adjusting some of those pots on the board is that some of them make the vectors go crazy instead of just like doing a smooth move back and forth.
Yeah, that means they're fucked because they're not getting the full smooth range. It's just janking. So what you could do is mark them where they're good and then, you know, exercise them back and forth a little bit and see if that helps. But it's usually only a temporary fix with those type of pots. I mean, you got to replace.
If you have
them.
Some, yeah, your best bet that might be a problem, but I don't know if that is the problem.
Right.
So if you have deoxit, the easiest thing to do is squirt some in there and clean that up. And if you get any results like that, like if that changes your symptom, if they look solid, then you've got a pretty good feeling that it's the pots. But
yeah,
I mean, if it was looking good before the monitor went down and then it's not looking good, I think that it's unlikely to be the game PCB pots. I think there's probably something else going on.
Because it's not like you adjusted those when you changed when you swapped to an LV2000, right? You didn't touch the fucking PCB. Yeah. So
yeah,
I'd sort of be inclined to think that.
What about headers, right? Headers could be a little
headers for sure. Also, there's those two bottle caps in the LV section. If your LV supply blew up, then maybe those are damaged, but in a way where they're still kind of working. Specifically, the fact that you're saying it only happens on the edges, that's when those transistors are running at the max. You know, they're pushing the most current. So that to me, I would try at least swapping out those two. I think it's Q101, Q102 are the bottle caps in the LV section. Mm-hmm. And swap those out and see.
Or shrink the screen and see if it does the same thing. Right.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, shrink the screen, see if it goes down. Because
then it would be operating at its max if it's not operating. Well, if you shrink the screen, it can't operate at its max, right? So if it's that transistor. But if it didn't happen, like Ian said before, right, think of all the components that you removed to do that change, which is headers. You're yanking on those headers, reflow those. Start with like the really easy shit, like reflow all those headers, put it back in. Well, fix it? No.
Really easy. You just swap the transistors if you have a bunch of extras. I have tons if you need some.
I don't have any, but I'll take some.
Yeah.
I think we both got the Doug special. I got like 100 of each.
I think I still have some left too.
Yeah. Let me know anytime. Just grab. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. On top of that, well, the other thing I did, because it was like shaky and I was like, well, maybe messing with the convergence will help. And so I started messing with the convergence, and I wanted to say this on the podcast so nobody else will do this. Always mark. Always mark where you start from, which I did not do. I just started messing with the tabs on the yoke, messing around, and I think I got it back to where it's pretty decent. But yeah, make sure to mark your starting point whenever you start messing around with convergence, because that's what I did not do.
Yeah.
So learn from my mistake.
Yeah, don't do that.
On top of that, so I mean, it's positive, you know, got it working, got to see the game, so I was happy about that. I was doing some more testing, another round of those Wico replacement grommets. John sent me another round, and the new 3D printed plates fit better into the frame of the Wico, and he sent some different grommet resistance, you know, different material it was made out of, and they still work good. I think he's still working on the final product. He was saying that he's broken some of the plastic bearings that go in the middle. He says he may have to just stick with a metal bearing for longevity purposes. But yeah, those are still, he's still working on those. They're going good. So
did the new grommet durometer, does it feel any different, or not enough change to feel the difference, or what do you think?
Didn't seem like it was
grommetometer.
Grommetometer. It didn't seem that much different. The one thing I did notice about these, because the first thing that I did was flip the one that I had in so that the grommet was pointing down, because that's the one thing he said to try. And what I noticed with that is that when I did that, all that's on the top of the grommet is just the silicone, the soft silicone, and so the joystick would like sink down further, so it was like a noticeable difference between my two joysticks. Like the one was sticking way up higher above the control panel than this one was sticking lower, because there's no solid platform for it to sit on. And also the way these grommets are made, they're both sides are even. They're both the same height. And on your normal grommets, grommets, one side is taller than the other side. And they both sides have like a solid metal plate for the joystick to sit upon. And so if you don't have that, so some of the bearings that he sent me were double flange, so there was like a bigger flange on one side and a smaller flange on the other. So I would use those with the bigger flange on top so the joystick could sit on it. It still seems like they sit maybe tiny bit low, so I was giving him the feedback that maybe, you know, make them similar to the original grommet where one side is taller than the other.
You can't fuck with that Robotron shit. It needs to be that full length, because you're
For sure. Yeah. I mean, when I flipped it, it was like noticeably smaller. Like, whoa, that doesn't look right. At all.
Knuckle busters, man, at that point. You're playing the cocktail version.
So yeah, but still more testing. He's still working on them, but I think it's still moving in a positive direction.
That's cool. I really think that's an awesome initiative.
Yeah, we'll see how they hold up. My next update is that Geech, who you heard from at the top of the show, he clued me in that there was a run of the ZQ boards, the Multitato boards on Arcade Shop, and I've been kind of lamenting since I sold my Zookeeper that I was like, oh man, I kind of wish I just kept that board out of it because I really like that multi-board. And so he's like, oh, they got those back in stock. So I was like, oh, head over there and grabbed one. They went out of stock in like a day, I think, day or two. But I got that and loaded it up in my JAMA cab, the Dig Dug cab that I have. And so I'm thinking that I might put the Battletoads control panel back on because it has two joystick holes and holes for two buttons on each joystick. And that way you can play Space Dungeon on that, which I'd like to do. So I'm thinking I'm going to put two Wickos in there with these new repro grommets and see how those do in that cab to play some Space Dungeon and some Zookeeper. Good and guess. Some Kicks.
Hard yeah. game. Good game.
And Kicks, and Kicks requires two buttons, so, you know, be good to have that other control panel on there. It just looks, doesn't look as good because I've got a Dig Dug marquee. And yeah, it is a slow draw and a fast draw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to have two buttons for Kicks. Yeah,
no wonder I suck at that game.
Blocks, no shit.
You draw like boxes all the way around with the fast draw, like these little skinny boxes, and then you like leave them like just a few pixels apart, and then you go slow draw just those last few pixels, and you get the huge points. Yeah, Kix is a great game.
It is.
It's really good. Yeah, that's how you got to play it. You got to have two buttons, man.
Yep, two buttons.
I just don't remember having two buttons. Wow, damn.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what I've been up to. So I guess that's about it.
All right.
What's the Timber story?
Yeah, what's the Timber story, Jordan?
We're in the playoffs.
is that Groff Daddy's Timber story?
Oh no, I'm not going to do that. I thought you were talking about Portland Timber. We won the, you know, the MLS back tournament this year. So, you know, we won the one tournament of the year, and we got some injuries, a couple ACLs, which is season-ending injuries of key players. No.
Wow. Thanks for the Timbers update.
You're welcome.
Could just fucking Google that shit in 5 minutes. Yeah. I thought it was like a... Never mind.
About the game Timber?
Yeah.
Yeah, nah.
Fine. Shouldn't have had that second sour beer then, I guess. Sacrifice play.
All right. I guess that wraps it up for episode 54.
Yeah. Studio 54. Another title.
Yeah. Send us an email at coinrejects@gmail.com. What were we going to say, Brandon?
I was going to say
6-2-2-6-3.
I wasn't going to say. I would say that if I had it memorized, but I don't. I was going to say that I'm hoping to have some pinball heavy topics next episode.
Ooh.
So
ooh, damn.
I will have an interview scheduled here with Wedgehead, which is a local arcade.
Oh, nice.
And so I'm trying to think of some good like pinball topics that we can talk about. So since we are a classic arcade, not arcade videos, but also pinball, I was hoping to just have some pinball-centric topics next time.
Sounds
good. Of course, not for the game of the episode, obviously.
But, yeah. Yeah, we're all going to get the pinball arcade and go to town.
Pin meme.
Yeah.
So, All right. Send us a voicemail at
503-766-2263.
And go play some games.
Yeah.
Later.
Play Puyan.